Hey, what's up? This is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 14 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. This one's a really cool one because I get a chance to talk to Johnny Raizone from Howlin' Rays. It's here in Los Angeles, California. It's actually just outside of downtown Los Angeles in Chinatown. And Johnny and Amanda, his wife, have created an amazing phenomenon. People wait upwards of 2-3 hours for their hot Nashville chicken sandwich, and they're also their hot Nashville chicken dishes. It's well worth the wait. It is. You'd think 2 hours for a sandwich would be crazy, but it's not. Every single person that I've steered towards the restaurant has written me back, called me and said that one of the best, if not the best, sandwiches they've ever had. I wanted to talk to Johnny because I wanted to hear his story. I wanted to hear his background. I knew he had a background in fine dining. He's worked with Nobu Matsuhisa, Gordon Ramsay, a number of chefs. He's worked at Husk in Nashville, and just wanted to kind of know his thought process and his theory and how he's turned this into such a phenomenon. I know you're going to enjoy this. He's just a great guy to talk to, great stories. He's open about everything and about the future of Howlin' Rays and their expansion and everything. Let me know what you think. Please subscribe. Enjoy this.
Well, good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Nice to see you again. I wanted to talk about it. I'm going to get kind of scattered, I'm sure, as I go. I'll talk about a bunch of different things. But I wanted to get a little bit into barbecue in your trips to Nashville and to Memphis, a little bit. But I'd just like to know, how did you started at La... I know you're the executive chef at La Poubelle. Were you at a restaurant prior to that? Or I'm sure you were at one or two restaurants prior to that.
Yeah, so prior to La Poubelle, I was working at Bouchon in Beverly Hills. For about 3 years, I was kind of running the fish station over there. That was a great experience because it was from the opening. So like we started with nothing, we built our systems, all that stuff. So it was wow. We literally opened up Bouchon. So I was part of the opening team on that. And then prior to that, I was the opening team of Gordon Ramsay at the London. Okay. So that was pretty intense training. And, you know, like running the different stations, mm-hmm. Same kind of idea. I've never really opened these big restaurants before. So to be on the opening team, that gave me a lot of, a good understanding of systems and creating systems, mm-hmm. creating prep schedules and what needs to be prepped the day before and starting from scratch on that, you know. So that was really cool. And
those were both at hotels, right? Because that was the Montage and then the other
So the Bouchon one is on the Montage property. Yeah. It is the standalone kind of like restaurant, okay. But it is on that property. And then the London is at the London Hotel. And then simultaneously when I was at Ramsay's, I was a fish butcher for Nobu Matsuhisa. Okay. At Nobu LA. Where is the guy? It's hard to see.
Let's see.
The stick figure.
I can see it.
That guy's about balance. So like, he's a guy. He's balancing. You see?
What's he balancing on? He's on. It's okay.
He's balancing the line.
Ah, that's really cool.
So that was a time where it was like wake up, you know, put your fish for 6 hours, and then take like a 45-minute walk to. Because the London Hotel and Nobu, they were fairly close, you know?
Yeah, they're relatively close.
And so then walk over there and then start night service and then go to sleep and do it over again, you know? And that was just nuts.
Wait, so prior to that, did you go to culinary school or were you always into being a chef or a cook? Or?
Yeah, I mean, my culinary school, I like to attribute Amazon to for the CIA textbook.
Okay.
I bought the CIA textbook off of Amazon and kind of like, wrote it out, you know, like word for word, just copied the text so that it was like going through my mind.
So that's how it works for you, is writing things out.
Yeah. At that time. Probably like 18, 17.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, that was where I got the language of the kitchen. Cause it's like, it's a completely different language when you're in the kitchen. Someone's like, grab me a chinois or a 2-inch hotel pan or, you know, a cold. Yeah, all that stuff. Like, okay, you know, brunoise this and stuff like that. Mm. Although everybody has their different versions of like a brunoise and stuff, but having the basic fundamentals, that gave me the, you know, footing to go on to work at these restaurants, you know.
What was the very first restaurant that you worked at? Because it wasn't those three, right?
I mean, my first restaurant job was a host at an Indian restaurant. I was a host, so I was like seating people. Okay. People always wanted the booths and stuff like that. And then after that, I was a dishwasher, garde manger kind of trainee at a French bistro here in Los Feliz called Figueroa Bistro.
Okay. Did you grow up in Los Angeles?
Yeah, born and raised.
Okay. And you live right in Silver Lake right now, right? Or Los Feliz?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so then from there, I read somewhere that you worked at Husk too in Nashville. Is that just a stint there?
I was staging there. So after La Poubelle, I was kind of like trying to figure out my next move and figure out, you know, what I was really passionate about in terms of what type of food and Sean Brock, the way he was kind of cooking. Originally, I was thinking about going to work there, you know, but I wanted to do a stage. So stages, you just go, you work for free, you know, and at the time what I was doing is it was like kind of like intense. I was staging where I'd go in the morning when the morning crew, you know, first gets there, and then I'd stay till the cleaning crew finishes. So like it was like a full day stage, and I did that for like 7 days straight. I flew out there all on my own dime and just wanted to learn it and see, you know, his style of cooking in terms of antebellum, you know, southern for cooking. Sure. That was what really interested me. But while I was out there, I discovered Prince's, and that kind of just...
And that put you in this direction, right? I was going to ask about Prince's.
Yeah. So that just, I was like, I've never had fried chicken in quarters. So like these quarter pieces, you know, it's where the thigh and the drumstick still attached with the backbone on, or the breast and the wings still attached. And that with the fact of it being also very spicy, this white bread on the bottom and pickles on top. So simple, like it's not complicated at all. But it really worked, you know, like as you're tearing apart the chicken, all the chicken juices gets sopped up into the bread.
It's so good.
The acid, you know, cuts through the richness of the fried chicken if it's fried in lard, mm-hmm. or all the different hot chicken places do it differently. Like it'll range from some are sweeter, some are dry shake, you know, like in the sense of, like Bolton's has a very dry shake.
Okay.
Too. And like Hattie B's will be a little bit more sweeter. Prince's, you know, it's a little more rich because I think they're frying in lard, a little more mustard powder flavor profile. Mm. You know, like they're all different, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about it. When I had it, I was just like, I want to bring this to LA. Like, and
was
so,
that an epiphany there, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, the real epiphany happened when I was at this other place called Pepper Fire. They were in a shack before.
Okay.
And then they moved to like a kind of strip mall location, but it's another hot chicken place. And I was at the original shack location and Howlin' Wolf came on. I was eating like a breast quarter hot or extra hot or something like that with some fried okra. And Howlin' Wolf came on the radio and it was just like this really beautiful moment. My hands were covered in like chicken juice. I was like sopping up in the styrofoam container, the sauce and the chicken juice and everything and eating it with the bread and the okra. It was just this magic moment. And at that time, that's where half of the name of Howlin' Race kind of comes from.
Okay.
Howlin' Wolf, obviously. And then Ray is when my father passed away. Yeah. He passed away and, it got me to a point where I was like, fuck it. I'm gonna do this. You know, like life is short, and I'm gonna figure out a way to bring this to life.
And there was nothing like that at all, which is so interesting. So was that on a research trip, or was that on your original trip when you were working at Husk?
That was on my second trip. Okay. My second trip, I went out there. The first trip was to stage at Husk, obviously, and then I came back, and then I was like, I'm going out there just for hot chicken now, and so. It's funny because like I went there, established friends at Husk, established some friends at a bar called Batter's Box. We also have a menu item called the Batter's Box.
I saw that.
It's based off of a bar right by Husk called Batter's Box.
Okay.
And it's like this divey bar. It smells like cigarettes in there. You smoke inside. It's just like really divey. You know, they have a bologna pizza. You know, when a certain light comes on, the beers are like $2 or something. It's cool.
There's something special about those places. In Texas, I went to a number of places like that.
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, that's what I kind of wanted to embody in Hal and Ray's, is that kind of level of banter, but the harsh reality of, like, we have an open kitchen, and you know the chefs are bantering, and on Expo, you know, there's a few videos and stuff like that. Like, we're talking back and
Oh,
forth
yeah.
to customers, and the heat levels. We're doing things that chefs don't normally do, like dab people with napkins, you know, things like. It's just raw, you know, and I wanted to kind of
It feels
add that.
real and authentic, and it feels like you're experiencing something. You're actually part of the situation that
Yeah,
they're, yeah.
and it's
All
like
right.
it's own little world. It's funny because I think I was commenting to a customer last week about it, how it was 11 o'clock in the morning. We're blasting like rap music, and we're selling like fried chicken. And there's like all these people outside. And I was like, isn't it? Because I just thought, I was like, this is crazy. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. Rap music is so loud in the restaurant. The bass is like shaking things. And people are eating like all these like different versions of heat and like dying and stuff like that. I was like, this is
Loving
crazy.
it in there, yeah.
Yeah, it was just a weird little moment where you walk by and you look in, and it's like this own little world. It doesn't seem like LA or Chinatown at
In
all, you know?
Chinatown, no, especially in Chinatown, it's
Yeah.
It stands out, but it also makes sense. It feels like home when you're in there. It doesn't. It's very comfortable. It's not something that's intimidating. It's just
Yeah.
wild.
Yeah. Although for some people it could be
I guess
intimidating
so.
because like you have all the chefs there, you know, the music's really loud, and it's like, and some people like to eat in private, you know, things like that. And especially if it's like what we find is the Howland, the hottest one we offer, most of the people take those home, you
Really.
know, and eat in their own like safety net
How
thing.
many of those? I'll get to all to Hal and raise the location. How many do you sell of those a week, do you think? Do you, on the, at that level?
I must say, like 10% of our sales is the Howland,
Oh,
you know. So,
really?
yeah, but I mean, that's not necessarily a lot because we are serving. So, if we serve 500 people in a shift, and 10% being what, 50,
Yeah.
so it's not that much, you
No.
know. But it's still a good amount because I think people do it for a lot of different reasons, you know. Whether it's the machismo or what's funny is some people think like, oh, I'm gonna get the Howland because they're named Howland Ray's, right? So that's their signature thing. It's not. So our cashier has to really warn people.
No, that's important.
We take that number, like it would normally be 20% probably, but we chop it down to 10% because we're warning people,
Gotcha.
like, have you had the hottest peppers in the world, like a Carolina Reaper before? Have you know, ever experienced that? You know, it's gonna hurt. It's a painful thing. You know, it's a 2-day process. You have to wear gloves, stuff like that. And then they go down to like hot
Do
or.
you recommend wearing gloves when you eat that one too? I think I've seen
Yeah,
people online eating it with
sure.
gloves.
No, it's you eat the Howland and then you go to the bathroom and it's not,
Yeah.
you know, like it stinks. It's
It's
not.
not. It's just like cutting
Why not?
habaneros or yeah.
Yeah, wear some gloves and you know, and not have to worry about that other level of pain, you know, or you cut your
That's
beard.
secondary. Yeah, your
Yeah,
eyes.
despite you have an itch, and then all of a sudden, you know, your neck is bleeding. You know,
Why? What is this weird red mark on my neck?
yeah, exactly. I mean, Jonathan Gold was writing about that, how when he was eating it, it got all over his hands, and then he touched his scalp, and he felt like he got sunburned on his head. You know,
Did he get the Howlin', or did he get a bunch of different ones and try
yeah,
them?
he got the variety of
Okay.
everything. He really does his due diligence, and it was at a time when like, you know, the restaurant was pretty new, and there was a lot of people. He waited in line. He came 3 times, you know.
Okay.
And so, as a food writer, you know, I really respect the way he does things
Oh
in
yeah.
terms of like it's not just one time. Here you go, you know, like, and also his variants of like he ordered all the heat levels, all the different pieces, you know, like really went into it. And people are like taking photos with him and stuff
So
like that.
did he actually ate it there?
Yeah, with his family, he brought his family,
Oh
and then he
wow.
went to Scoops after for ice cream.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
So
it was
then
really cool seeing him walking away with like the Howland bags.
Oh,
And
that is a. Do you have a photo of that? That would be a really cool photo.
I mean, you know, like taking
No, I mean,
we're
did someone grab it? I don't.
yeah, no, I got it in my head, you know. But with a lot of we do a lot of like celebrity and NBA guys and stuff like that, and we're very discreet about it. You know,
Well,
like
of course.
some of our customers, like we can't really like shout out when they're there and stuff like that, because then, you know, all the other people in line will just kind of, you know, most of them send their assistants and stuff like that. But a lot of them want to check out the restaurant and be in it and see the vibe and stuff.
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, we're very cautious with that.
I think the day that I was filming you, you were talking, there were a number of different NBA players were actually coming, and it was something that you guys were being discreet about. It was something that,
we like to, you know, we want them to try the chicken, you know what I mean? But also we want to respect the kind of anonymity of things, you know?
And you don't want to turn your place into like a paparazzi. It already has a 2-3 hour line.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, it's more about, you know, just experience the chicken and all that. I don't want it to be like a celebrity hotspot or whatever.
That's not your intention. So then when you went to Nashville, did you and Amanda go, or was it just yourself? Or?
Yeah. So the first time I went, it was by myself. The second time we made a tour out of it, you know, to kind of like really do our research and taste every single different variety available. And, so she flew out with me.
And then you guys opened up, did you decide to do a food truck? Is that the first thing you did?
Yeah. So we did I negotiated a 6-month lease on a food truck from a commissary here in the San Fernando Valley. And, I don't want to buy a truck because that's a major investment. I didn't know, you know, how it would go. You know, food trucks, like, it's they're hard, man. It's really hard, especially with like your kind of non-typical items. Like if you're doing quarter pieces in a food truck for fry, you know, and it takes 20 minutes to cook them, you know, like that's hard to do with one fryer. You know, the most food trucks, their layouts are built for tacos. Like they're built with like a steam table, like a 40 to 60 inch griddle for tortillas and stuff, and one fryer for deep frying like chips or whatever. And it's built. That's the layout. You know what I mean? It's built for speed, efficiency on tacos. You know, it's not like they're built with like 5 fryers, some warmers and stuff like that for chicken. You know, unless you build it out.
That's true. So did you have some of your same team with you on the food truck?
I only had one employee.
Okay.
So I had a guy from Inglewood helping me out. His name's Chris. Eventually he went on to, he was always interested in doing movies and stuff like that. He was, he drove the food truck for Fatburger. And so that's where I kind of pulled him in from, you know, he could drive it. I wasn't really good at driving it. I mean, it's a beast. You know?
No, I can.
It's scary.
I think I would take things out, at least to my right periphery, I think.
Plus, you have to have like $1 million coverage on it because it's got a propane tank.
Well, that's
true. It's
got
a wastewater tank, so there's wastewater. So one little thing like that, then, you know.
That's crazy. Yeah. So was a truck successful enough that you knew you needed to, like, was there, because I only heard about you when you had your brick and mortar location. So was it blowing up when you had a truck, or did you just
move? I would say it was blowing up. I mean, we were getting media coverage and stuff like that and doing a really good job. It really kind of took off when we launched our sandwich, you know, like the fried chicken sandwich. But it was doing well enough where people knew about it. And, you know, we were creating regulars, you know, so like on Thursdays we'd be at like the Arts District. Saturdays we'd be like in Silver Lake, and every kind of week, you know, people would come in and get their fix, you know, but it wasn't like busy enough where it was highly profitable. It was more for understanding the marketing of like, is this going to work in LA? Like, is this dish going to do well? Yeah. You know, it was more of that kind of approach. And, ultimately that led to Chinatown because our two busiest locations were Chinatown's right in the middle of those two locations.
So that makes sense. I was curious as to why you chose that location.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that, and then also not having like a huge amount of capital in terms of opening a restaurant, because I didn't want to most restaurants have, I'd say, I don't know, 80, 90% of restaurants have investors.
For sure.
And those investors carry a big you know, amount of power over the chefs and owners of the restaurant whose baby it is, because the investors are trying to get their money back and make money. And, you know, that can kind of drive a business in terms of that. Like, our goal is to make money, you know, obviously. And so with me there, why Chinatown? Because my goal wasn't just about making money. You know, it was so much more than that. I got tired of working with chefs. I wanted to work with people who, you know, were just hard workers. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to have to bring in like these Le Cordon Bleu graduates or whatever this guy worked, you know, this steakhouse for 5 years and he's so arrogant. Nah, I have 12 years under my belt as a chef, and I can train most of over the years, most of the people that I really liked working with were people who were eager to learn, they just wanted to work and they were eager to learn and learn more and more and more. And the people I didn't like working with were the people that thought they were and they knew everything. I know how to make a crepe galantine. I know how to make this. And it's like, okay, great. You know, why don't you have your own restaurant right now?
That's true.
And there's so many of those. And, mm-hmm. and with chefs now being kind of like in this spotlight, it's becoming more common, you mm-hmm. know, that you have all these like head chefs, like executive chefs, and there's no more line cooks. There's no more like solid sous chefs. There's no more solid, you know, prep cooks that can bang out agnolotis and, you know, like 500 of them, because that's what's happening in a lot of like the chefs are struggling with staffing right now, quality staffing. So I kind of foresaw that, and I was like, you know, I want to work with just I want to like an In-N-Out model, uh-huh. you know, like
you can train anybody anything if they work hard enough, you could train them, right?
For sure. It's fried chicken. And also like you use the backbone of the guys that you've trained from day one to train them, and it creates a system that's just, it keeps getting better and better and better. Mm-hmm. And like our chicken now is so much better than it was on the truck, than it was on day one. And it's not because we're changing the recipe or anything like that. It's because the training with the staff, improving equipment, and improving systems too. So like we know how much we're going to need to go through, you know, in 7 minutes, you know, so things like that.
Yeah. It seems like a machine. It's like a living machine that you have there. They know what they're doing and they just do it.
Yeah. I mean, restaurants have always been to me, I think I was talking to, I did some consulting work and I was talking to another consultant, and he told me it's like the restaurants are a living, breathing thing. Every day is a life cycle. So every day it's born, you know, and cleaned, you know, uh-huh. and at the end of the night it dies. And the next day it's a new cycle.
So like a phoenix.
It's born again, and you have to clean it again. You know what I mean? You have to mop the floors again, mm-hmm. you know, and at the end of the night you have to take out all the trash and clean it again. And then next day it's the same thing. So if you have a good cycle, a healthy cyclical system within a restaurant where product's not being carried over to the next day too much, you're not prepping too much, you know, it's harder, you know, because you prep every day instead of prepping once every 3 days or whatever, but the quality on things, you know, it's just a lot higher. So the cyclical systems within a restaurant is very interesting. And taking that approach has enabled me to work with guys like the guys that I'm working with.
You've got to be proud of them, because it seems like the fact that they have grown to that point where it's such a well-oiled machine, and the food, the quality of the food is so top notch right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And then now moving forward, these guys can go and say, open a store in another city, and I can fly that. And then here you have somebody who was working at say Phil's Coffee mm-hmm. as a cashier. And now he's cooking on a line at Hal and Ray's, and 4 or 5 months from now, 10 months from now, if I decide to open in another city, he could be a member of like that SWAT team opening another
city. That's perfect. And he would be at Phil's.
So of course that's going to create loyalty mm-hmm. within the staff. That's going to create, you know, a sense of pride and care and ownership, yeah. you know?
Yeah, definitely. So are you planning on, I know that you're expanding right now. Are you expanding into the was there a business next door? Is that what there was? Or?
Yeah. So Michelle, she had a kitchen like equipment store next door, like small wares and stuff, mm-hmm. and she retired. And so that's another, I think, 1,000 square feet or so. So it's going to like essentially triple our space. And it's going to kind of alleviate the line. So the line will probably be like 30 minutes long, you know, so right now it's like sometimes an hour to 2 hours to 3 hours.
Yeah. 3 hours sometimes.
Yeah. So, and that's not necessarily sustainable for, for it can work for barbecue because that's a low and slow food. Mm-hmm. But for fried chicken, you know, that's a little bit of it's quick, you know. Yeah. And when someone's waiting for 3 hours for just a chicken sandwich, you know, that takes, you know, I don't know, 10 minutes to make or something like that, you know. The expectations are really, really high, you know, and if I wasn't doing anything or didn't do anything, then that would be like I'm ignoring the customers their asks, you know, and they're kind of like, so by expanding, you know, yeah, it'll cut down the line and alleviate that kind of pressure, and we'll be able to serve more people.
So you're expanding your kitchen as well as a dining area, or is it going to be both? Or
yeah, so right now it's like it's an L mm-hmm. bar, so I'm gonna add another bar to it like that, so the kitchen's right in the middle, and so guys here,
oh, it's on that side. I get you. Okay.
Yeah, so that you can see each other, so they're eating Howlin' right here, these guys can look at him, and it's an open kitchen and there's chefs in the middle, because gotcha. What's really worked is that open kitchen vibe, people seeing the chefs passing the sandwiches to people. Yeah, that's a aspect to Howlin' Rays. That's a component to its branding, to its structure and training and everything like that. So, because you don't really see a lot of open kitchen fried chicken places, because mm-hmm. it's secret, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes to take that approach where it's like, yeah, and some of the negative things are there are imitators kind of popping up.
I was going to ask about that a little bit.
Yeah, because you can go, you can see, you look, you're not going to figure it out, mm-hmm. you know, because it's so layered and so complicated in terms of our process, you know, and then the ingredients and everything we use is so specific, and it's taken so long to develop it. Mm-hmm. So no one's going to really figure that out, and I'm not afraid of that. But in terms of just watching the system, you know, they're saying, oh, it's getting dipped here, it's going like that, okay, you know, I can do that.
Yeah, and like seeing how it's set up, I guess they could see that
part. Yeah, and that's fine. That's a compliment. Mm-hmm. That means that, you know, I'm motivating somebody or a business owner mm-hmm. enough to risk their own money on something that, you know, they see and get motivated by. That's inspiring, and I can't get mad at that or upset at that, because that would just be like, you know, the restaurant industry is hard enough. So if someone's kind of doing something similar to what you're doing, that's a huge compliment.
For sure.
You know, and that's the way, because I get asked that a lot, you know, and that's my approach to it, because it spread love, you know, you can't get mad at things. There's a lot of things in life that are going to happen, you know, and it's how you deal with it that, you know, is really important. You know?
And there's room for other restaurants, similar restaurants.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be Howlin' Rays. It's still.
Yeah, and exactly. And that the level of experience and the hospitality that we're providing and things like that, a lot of the stuff that we're doing is not imitatable.
Exactly. And so, you've also created a loyal fan base that that you continue to feed and continue to grow.
No, it's crazy. I mean, a lot of that line is our regulars. A lot of the line that every day is like the Wednesday crowd, then the Thursday crowd, the Friday crowd, Saturday crowd. And all those crowds are different crowds, but they're always like, they're pretty much the same people. You know,
you see a lot of the same faces.
Oh yeah. Oh my, it's nuts. How many, it's crazy for that. The fact that the line's that long, and there's so many regulars. That's what boggles me too, you know.
That is crazy.
So now, many first name basis people, the staff and just ordering.
That's awesome.
They even know their orders, you know, like what they're gonna order.
That's really cool. Now there is a way to order ahead of time, correct? Like if you order in bulk or something, is that?
Yeah, so we do a pre-order system where if you have like a party of 10 online on our website, it's like we open up a certain amount of slots.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, yeah.
Yeah, every week, because in the beginning it was easy, so we had a lot of slots, but now people are ordering for like 50 people, you know, and in one slot. So then you got 50 people, another 50 people, 40 people, and then we opened.
Yeah, I know. I was there before opening. It's incredible.
Yeah, so we kind of had to – we can't add more slots to that because there's only a certain amount of people we can cook for before we open in that 1 hour, mm-hmm. you know. So what people are doing now is like they're booking out for a month, 2 months.
Yeah, I noticed. I looked a week ahead or 2 weeks, and it was – booked out. So does that window not, I thought that window opened up every day. It's actually, it books out so people can book out for a month or 2 months.
Yeah, we every I think I'm not 100% sure how Amanda and Natalie are kind of like executing it, but
Okay.
there's a system to it where it like in a week or every 2 weeks, say, it opens up slots for 2 weeks
Okay.
From that date or something like that, or a month from that date. And then
Okay.
it got so backed up that we had to open up 2 months in advance.
That's
You know,
crazy.
people were frustrated. They want to get their order in, you know?
Okay.
So, but with the expansion, that's going to alleviate a lot of these weird kind of systems that we've had to create to kind of cater to, you know, big orders and stuff like that. The concept behind the pre-order thing was originally to speed up the line because there's guys coming in line and ordering like 40
Well,
sandwiches.
that makes sense.
Just one guy in line. So, you know, like there's a line of like 50 people. That one guy is cooking, ordering for 50
He's
people. Then he,
clogging it up, yeah.
yeah. So it's like that was, it's just been a, such a great learning curve, you know, and with all the systems and stuff like that. And we're just getting better and better and better every day. And that's kind of like my philosophy and what I like to share with the guys. You know, it's like you're never the shit. You're never perfect. You're never like the cool thing about being a chef or any kind of like creative field or craft is like you will always learn. You will never stop with barbecue. You will never, Franklin's, you know, he's still learning,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? I mean, yeah, that's the beautiful thing about doing something like this is like you will never get to that point. And that's a big Thomas Keller philosophy is like you're always in search of perfection.
Okay.
You're never going to be perfect.
That's great to know that that's what he feels. That's important.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
wow. So when does it expand? When do you think you'll get the expansion finished? By the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I for sure I think by the end of the year the expansion will be complete, and then we have a few other major announcements that we're probably going to be breaking out.
Okay, cool. Well, I won't ask about those. We'll check online. Well, usually Twitter is the best way to get announcements.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter or
Or is
Instagram.
Instagram,
We're on like Eater quite a bit. A lot of different media outlets, you know, kind of cover us. LA Times will say something every once in a while. You know, Los Angeles Magazine. We're really blessed with the amount of like love that we're getting from media and from customers alike.
And who does your branding? Do you guys do that in-house?
Amanda, yeah, my
Oh, she
wife.
does a great job. It's
Yeah, she has a designer that she works with on like all the packaging and
yeah,
you
it's
know
so
the boxes.
clean and yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah, it really fits you guys too.
yeah, yeah.
So is there
It's
anything
really.
you want to say about your staff? Your staff seems awesome. Are there standouts or the guys? Well, it's a team, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, they all have their own strengths and weaknesses for sure. And what we've kind of created there and the whole, you know, what Howlin' Raised is embodying is really boosting people up, you know, and like taking someone who's like, yeah, a cashier at Phil's or someone who worked at Starbucks, you know, and giving them these skills and these life skills and teaching them and grinding them. It's hard work, you know? So like I'm so grateful for all the staff members for each and every you know, flaw but also strength that they have, you know, because it makes everybody stronger.
And I see that you took them on a trip to Nashville, right? Or to Memphis?
Yeah. Flew them out to Nashville, try all the hot chicken spots, introduce them to some of the friends that I have out there, and then take them to Bouchon, you know, to show them like this
That's
is where
cool.
I was cooking before, you know. Took them to Matsuhisa,
Nice.
Nobu sushi spot to
Yeah.
show them. It's funny because each one has their own lessons in it. The Matsuhisa one, it's a counter service. We're counter service. We're just like sushi chefs, right? So we're passing over chicken sandwiches. We're giving them
Exactly.
pickles. So it's amazing because I feel like a lot of companies, you know, don't invest enough into their staff because of high turnover rates and, you know, it's expensive and they don't maybe see the value as much as other companies do and stuff. There are companies that do it.
Yeah.
And so I see the effects of it, you know, in terms of employees, like I see the benefits to it because it's just they perform so much more better. And then they also have rewards to look forward to.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it definitely you can tell that it's a family and it's a team, and especially the photos that you see on Instagram or other people filming, it's really killer. You've created a great vibe.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it embodies like Southern hospitality, but it takes it to another kind of level, you know, where it's like you're treating your staff like they're customers too,
And you still have the Yes Chef, which is awesome too. That's
yeah, I mean, that's the only way I know how to run a kitchen at this. That's based on experience. Oh, yeah. When an order comes in, you know, if nobody calls it out, I don't know how to do that. Computer screen or so, I don't know the system. Mm-hmm. That system is a brigade system that I was cooking in for 10 years, you know?
Excellent. Well, lastly, barbecue-wise, when you in Nashville, were there any barbecue spots that you loved? Or I saw you guys went to Martin's Barbecue, right?
Yeah, Martin's was great. We really liked that. The whole – I love the way that – the way the restaurant's kind of set up with the smoker and everything like that, it really just it creates this, like, the atmosphere was what I was most impressed with, you know, when I went there. Some of their hot sauces are really cool, you know. When going out to Nashville and getting barbecue, I'm a huge fan of – I want to do this, but Alabama white sauce.
Uh-huh.
I really, really like that. It's interesting because there's also a spot, Arnold's Meat and Three.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily known for their barbecue, but okay. They make really good sides. And when they do offer barbecue, it's really it's amazing, you know. And they have wood. They're smoking meats and they're smoking stuff, you know. But Arnold's Meat and Three is a spot that I love to go to.
I don't know that one, so thank you very much for that.
Yeah, it's a Meat and Three. So meaning like you get a choice of a meat and three sides, and their sides are like just. Amazing, you know.
I have to check that out.
They're only open, I think, for lunch.
Okay.
And 5 days a week, I think. They recently expanded. It's basically a cafeteria that's won a James Beard Award.
Oh, fantastic! Oh, that's killer. That's amazing. Yeah.
So Arnold's Meat and Three is great.
LA wise, what do you eat in LA? What do you like to eat?
I mean, Trudy's hooks us up a lot. He
I was just editing Bert's. I interviewed him at his smoker one day. And he's he comes over a lot, right? Like two or three times.
He brings us brisket and we give him chicken. You know, it's a good little exchange. I went back in the day. I was friends with the chefs over at Barrel and Ashes. You know, but I think they've gone over some.
Yeah, they've kind of changed a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, Bledsoe's. I love to go to Bledsoe's. I like their collard greens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they're doing a killer job. I haven't tried too much of the newer ones that are kind of like popping up. You know, I know there's a lot now. I think with like Trudy's and I think Moose.
Yeah, there's Moose and the Republic and yeah.
Yeah, and so I heard. I think he's supposed to bring us some. Haven't yet tried that one, but I mean they're all pretty solid. You know?
Yeah, definitely. And they're using the offset smokers, and it feels very Texas style.
Yeah, I mean a lot of people I think are using water tanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think they're all the propane tanks.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about it at all. I mean, I know fried chicken, and like now that's really what I'm just getting really, really good at, you know? I mean, of course, like with my French background and stuff, I could take a tomahawk steak and really, you know, do a good job cooking a tomahawk steak, you know, like French with basting and, you know. But right now it's just fried chicken, you know, just really learning that and learning the business side of it too, in terms of, you know, with staff and all the other components to running a restaurant, creating a brand and keeping the demand, you know, high. I mean,
did you ever imagine that it would be this popular? Like, I'm sure you knew it would be popular, but not this.
No, not at all. I mean, it's nuts. If I did, I would have opened it a lot bigger. You know, with more refrigeration, more fryers, you know, but not in 500 square feet. 500 square feet is serving 500 people in 5 hours.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Are you tired after, or is it you invigorated after?
No, this past year has been really rough because I've kind of like worked a lot on the expo station. So like every day I'm the one kind of like talking to people and explaining their order and expediting their order. And, it gets
that's a lot of humans.
Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, your throat, you're calling out orders, all it's intense, you know, it really is. It's been the most mentally kind of fatigued I've been in my career. I mean, it's not as physically demanding as like, say, working a 16 hour shift 5 days a week, but it's a little bit more mental because there's just so many faces and providing a genuine level of hospitality, but also just not being a robot about it and having that individual touch with people.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a little kid, you know, or if it's a older woman, you know, joking about how she is with her daughter, but saying they're sisters, you know, like little.
And they just flew in from Albuquerque and they came straight from the airport. And
Yeah. A lot of people actually come straight from the airport to the restaurant, which is kind of, I guess, because it's like on the way to LA somehow for LAX. I don't know. But a lot of people do that. You know, it's their first stop. They're really excited. They want to try it. They've heard about it. Things like that. So it's exciting. And for the future, I think that there's a lot of possibility for the company and the brand to grow in a more sustainable way. You know, right now it's sustainable, but it's a grind, you know, it's really, those shifts are intense. You know,
I can imagine. And you're open Wednesday through Sunday, 10 to 4 or 11 to 4. Okay.
So if you get there at 4 o'clock, and get in line, we still serve you. So some days we're technically open till 6, but that or 5:30 or whatever. But if you show up at 4 o'clock, it's funny because I think people think we close at 4, so they at 4 o'clock or 3:30, they're like, I'm not going. But the line's still long.
Gotcha. You know what I mean? That makes sense.
Yeah, but it's weird because, you know, I don't know. I think if I don't know, it's just interesting. You know, 11 to 4. And if you get there at 4, we do serve you. So
because do you have a cutoff, or do you do a cutoff or something in the line? Okay.
Send one of our guys. He has a vest and just kind of stands there and cuts the line off. So then he says, "Oh, you know, we want to make sure we get all the chicken for everybody." Also, what can happen is the fryers can burn. So every single piece of chicken that's put into a fryer, maybe a little piece of dredge falls off, or some of the flour drops down to fryers. Have these cold zones where there's burners, like there's 4 burners, and then it goes down, and then there's a cold zone. So all this stuff drops in there. And what happens is over time, that can build, they can go up to the burners and then burn all the oil.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So after cooking, say, 400 pounds of chicken in one fryer, you know, you have to either clean it, shut it off, switch it out, whatnot. And that's kind of difficult during service, you know?
That's why you're not open for lunch and dinner.
Not yet.
So that could be something.
Just because the volume that we're doing, it would be too hard on staff. I'd have to have – already I have almost 20 guys in 500 square feet just for 5 days a week. You know what I mean? Like just 5 days. And so 20 people, you know, like – so I would have to get
– And that changeover of the staff, it would just be – it would
it would change things a lot. And I'd have to get probably like 35 people for a 500 square foot restaurant. That's a lot of people. And so it's better to expand – and increase the hours there, then and there, and make it a little bit easier for the staff. So the employees are more efficient. So instead of, you know, like one guy doing one thing, one guy can do two things now because he has more space to do so, that you know. Sense. Or you can have two guys doing one station that gets hit really hard, you know. But right now you can't because there's no space for it.
No, not at all. One last thing. Is there like a sweet spot of time that people could come that – it won't be as crazy busy?
Yeah. Wednesday through Friday at like 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Perfect. Okay. Not long wait at all. Okay. But what happens is then people catch on and then a lot of people go.
That is true. Yeah. That's probably what's going to happen. Right
now, like last week, it wasn't that bad. It was like 35 minutes or 40 minutes. Cause
that's not bad at all.
Yeah. I did some upgrades on our fryers and kind of this station where a lot of the saucing goes on. And so I'm able to sometimes pull out a second cashier when the kitchen can kind of handle it, like just a mobile cashier, like you've seen it in and out and stuff. Yeah. So we're doing that now. So now I feel like the lines are the wait times are going to – we're serving more people. I looked at it, I think, last week. We're serving more people, I think 100 more people and finishing earlier in terms of service from a year ago.
Well, that's good to know.
So we would do like, I don't know, 180 transactions or something last year. And then now we're doing 270 transactions and finishing earlier.
Huh.
And the transactions are larger with more people. So each transaction, it's like, say, you and somebody else, two sandwiches or something like that.
Minimum,
right?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah. So most of the time, it's not solo diners there because it's such a long wait, you know?
Yeah.
But so things are a lot more efficient and the line's moving a lot faster and we're serving more people already. So with expansion coming, that's definitely going to alleviate that.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I'm excited for the expansion. I'm excited for you. I'm proud of you, Chef. You've done such a great job, and it's a great business. And thank you again for taking the time to talk. I really do appreciate it. Awesome. Well, have a great day, and good luck tomorrow with service. And I'll come by and see you soon.
You got it. Appreciate it, Ken.
Thank you.
Right. Bye. Cheers.